brainwashed in our childhood, brainwashed by the school, brainwashed by our teachers, and brainwashed by all the rules, brainwashed by our leaders, by our kings and queens, brainwashed in the open and brainwashed behind the scenes.
Tonight on Total Information Radio from New York, 9/11, 5 years later, an exclusive interview with a 9/11 eyewitness, Nico Help, Jim Fetzer, and Barry Zwicker on 9/11 TV Figure, and much more. Stay tuned.
Here's a little edge for the never believer. Yeah, 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 yeah.
I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
And welcome to the September 18th, 2006 edition of Total Information Radio. We have quite a show for y'all tonight. We traveled up to New York for the weekend of the 9/11th anniversary, the 5th anniversary of that, and along the way met some great people and got some interesting audio, and we're going to cram as much of that as we possibly can for you into this edition of the program. The first thing we're going to do is to listen to an interview I conducted with an actual 9/11 eyewitness. Now, as you may or may not know, this program and its website have been getting more and more interested in the concept of 9/11 TV fakery. That is, that the videos we saw on TV of what happened on 9/11 were not entirely accurate and true to life. Of course, when you start examining that, the first question people always ask is, how does that reconcile with the eyewitness accounts of what happened in Manhattan? And this is a question that's always been on my mind. So when I went up to New York on the anniversary of 9/11, I made it a point to interview and get on the record what a good friend of mine saw on 9/11, someone who I talked to on that day. So this is from late in the evening, I guess early Saturday morning, September 9th, after a little bit of wine, and this is how it went. Let's take a listen to an interview with an actual 9/11 eyewitness.
So I'm here with
Mike Edwards.
Mike Edwards. Mike's a good friend of mine. He's a smart guy. He was in the same college program for geniuses that I was, and he's going to give us his eyewitness description of what he saw on 9/11. So you were here in Jersey City, correct, right across the river from the World Trade Center?
That's right, and as you may know from being in the area, right now we have this huge amount of skyscrapers sort of right along the shore of the Jersey City coast, if you will, but at the time there weren't any. You could have a very clear view of the lower Manhattan skyline.
And you were on the roof of this building, about four stories.
I wasn't actually on the roof, but I'm on the top floor, yeah. It's like three floors up and looking pretty much, you know, southeast.
So you were home that morning and the news came on and said a plane hit the Trade Center, and then what happened?
Actually, no, what happened was I was up. I'd actually been just like laid off a month before, and good for me because I would have been going through there at the time. My wife called me. She had just gotten into work early, and she called me, I guess, you know, it was obviously after 8:30, and she said, yeah, one of the towers is on fire. You know, like some sort of plane hit it. Yeah, that's so strange. And, you know, you don't really think of anything about it. It's just sort of like
8:45.
Yeah, it could be like a little Cessna or something, you know. A plane is all I knew. So I was looking outside, and I was like, oh, that's a dangerous thing. And it's just, you could see, like, black smoke, and you couldn't tell the extent of the damage from where I was, but there was a lot of smoke. That's something. So, you know, I'm kind of watching it, and I'm looking, and I can see, like, way south of Battery Park. I can see the whole sky, and I, you know, saw this plane coming up. And, you know, parallax is sort of funny. I mean, you see planes flying overhead all the time. I mean, I'm pretty much on the Newark flight path, so, you know, so I see a plane coming in, and it looks kind of low, but you can never tell how far out it is, and so I'm just kind of, like, you know, sort of casually following as it goes to, you know, what I think is over Brooklyn and Queens, and then it drives right into the tower, and then the next thing I see is the plane, the tower, and then this rapidly expanding orange ball of flame.
Now that's an interesting description of what you just said. You said it looked like it was flying over Brooklyn or Queens.
Well, this is what I'm saying with the you know, the parallax. At a certain distance, I couldn't tell, because I would have assumed, not knowing that, you know, the World Trade Center was under attack, that it was going that way. But I mean, it was the right size, the right height, the right whatever to be hitting the World Trade Center without a doubt. It just, well, I wouldn't have assumed that that was happening at the time.
Do you think it's at all possible from where you were that perhaps it was flying closer to Brooklyn or Queens, and at the same time, from your perspective, from the west, that it flew by the Trade Center? It might have actually flown behind the Trade Center at the same instant.
Nope.
An explosion went off
that.
In the Trade Center.
Because, I mean, it was so incongruous, you wouldn't have expected such a thing to happen. And I had a very clear view of the skyline. I would have seen behind, you know, at the other end of the flight path, the plane. It just didn't appear. It hit the tower. It absolutely hit the tower.
But you said you checked for that. What do you mean? How did you check?
Well, but the first thing I saw was this explosion. I was like, where'd that plane go? And then I realized, you know, I connected it in my mind in about a half a second. Like, oh, the plane hit the tower.
Do you think it could have possibly just hooked the right turn and been lost in the smoke?
It was coming so rapidly that it would have been a miracle of physics if it had taken a full right turn exactly where the towers were.
Not even a full right turn.
No, it would have been a hard right, because it was not banking.
Slightly banking to the right.
The thing was, it was flying straight and level.
So
across all the way up towards southern Manhattan.
So after the explosion, you still had in your point of view, you could see to the left, to the north of the towers, and beyond that. That wasn't obscured by smoke from either the explosion or the first event.
Not really, no.
So if it turned at like
there was
10 or 20 degrees, you could have seen it.
No, there's no way that at that point it could have turned to the degree that it would have you would have seen it. You would have seen it turn. It was going really quickly.
Okay. Fair enough. So it was a bright. What did the explosion look like?
It was bright orange with, you know, sort of blackish around it. We've all seen Hollywood movies, and that's one of the first few things I thought about when I actually got a second to think about it. It was a fuel explosion.
Do you think by the 21st century the military might have had Romulan cloaking technology, and perhaps it flew by and disappeared?
Pretty unlikely.
That's what a former top Bush administration official was speculating at this point.
Yeah, that's not.
Not top, fourth level.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can't cloak visible wavelengths yet.
Okay, but have you read about how that might be theoretically possible?
Theoretically possible, but not at that wavelength.
Okay.
Not at that wavelength. It's impossible.
Interesting. Anything else of interest happened that day?
No, that was pretty much it.
Okay. Well, no, that's...
Yeah, I mean, you know...
Then
we saw the tower's pancake, and that was horrifying, and one of the saddest.
Did it look like a pancake, or did it look like it was, like, fucking blown to kingdom come?
No, it fell around just
like... And all the smoke. Have you looked at a lot of the video of it since then?
I fucking don't need to.
Okay.
It just went down.
So you haven't really looked at the video of the towers or the plane sitting since then much?
I've seen them.
Uh-huh.
But I remember what
it
I saw.
It was on TV a lot that day.
Yeah, it was.
What was that? Well, I don't know how much of this you realize. I actually talked to you that day, if you remember.
Well, maybe you did.
That me was, I was down in Virginia.
Yeah.
And I was after the planes came and the explosions in New York. I was, for instance, I was on Instant Messenger with our friend Uther of Pendragon with the red hair.
Yeah.
And he IM'd me about how he heard something crashed over 95. Mm. And then it wasn't until about at least 20 minutes after that that I heard and felt the big explosion, which was the Pentagon. Because have you looked at the timeline of the different Pentagon hits? Most of the pictures you see are after the whole thing's kind of collapsed.
Uh-huh.
That was actually some kind of secondary event after the first event, which was about 20 to 40 minutes earlier, which is what Pendre apparently was telling about on Instant Messenger along for it.
Yeah,
and then later
I
in the day,
very little about the DC.
Yeah,
DC.
Then about an hour later was when I was up on the roof and watching the Pentagon burn, and that's when I talked to you and you told me that you saw the plane.
Right.
I have a pretty good memory.
That's right. You're right. Yeah.
Let me ask you something else. There's a guy named Rick Siegel who I'm not sure if he got out there before the second plane hit, but he set up cameras. He was a professional videographer. He set up cameras on the Hoboken waterfront, and he has a film called 9/11 Eyewitness Hoboken. And when you analyze when you look at the footage, there were like 16 to 18 helicopters in the air that day. Did you see any kind of helicopter activity?
I will tell you.
That whole maybe 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. area.
One of the things I remember the most about the day is that, and this was actually remarkable, and I think even like Springsteen commented on this in a song, the sky was blue. I mean, clear.
The weather was very clear.
Blue.
They couldn't have made it clearer with weather control technology.
I can't comment on that because that's...
That was just a figure of speech.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, the sky was very clear, so you would have seen... Anything.
But I mean, after all the smoke was pouring out, it was still a clear sky. Or?
Yeah, I mean, there's a stream of smoke, and there's a very clear sort of column, like going the, you know.
Well, but there were definitely at least news helicopters.
At a certain point, yeah.
Do you think you saw a lot of helicopters? You see 2, 3, 4, 10
before the plane hit.
Not necessarily.
There was nothing.
Okay.
There's nothing. The sky was clear. At a certain point...
Of course, there was a live feed from at least one helicopter onto the news of the plane hitting.
Were you watching a lot of TV, or were you over the East River, I think, if I remember the angle right.
Were you looking out of the window, or were you watching TV, or both?
I was looking out the window. I saw this entirely through the window.
Actually, I think it looked to me, the angle seemed to be more like it was over the Hudson, like north of here.
Oh, could be. Mel...
Because it was definitely north of the towers.
I'm thinking of.
And yeah, it looked like to me it was around the west side
of Manhattan. As far as the vicinity.
Around Midtown, west side, Hudson River, that sort of thing.
As far as the vicinity of the towers, like, as I was watching the plane, I was like, concentrating on the plane and the building and everything else. I didn't see anything around that. I didn't see the plane fly past. There was just that. So, I don't remember seeing a lot of helicopters. I was any helicopter, frankly, before the event, and there were a few, but they didn't seem like there was a swarm of helicopters. I wouldn't have remarked on them being a lot of them. There were a few.
All right. Now, you may have noticed in there a discussion of so-called cloaking technology. Now, one of the other 9/11 researchers talking about this is Dr. Morgan Reynolds, and there is an article on his site, nomoregames.net. It's called How They Did the Plane Trick at WTC2. And if you go in there, he starts talking about a technology called electrochromic polymer, which basically you put that on one side of an object and it kind of senses what the image is, and then it on the opposite side of that object, it projects that same image. So it's kind of basically a cloaking device, and it works best in the clear blue sky. So this is what Morgan Reynolds writes. The technology was publicly available in 2003, so it is possible the military had it earlier. Such a plane might have taken off, da-da-da-da-da-da. The soon-to-turn invisible plane would blend in with a radar inject and become the new radar blip. The aircraft could have been remote-controlled to fly by the South Tower on its east side, or it could have been piloted by a human. The plane would time its switch to invisibility at the South Tower with nearly simultaneous ignition of internal charges in the tower. It would all happen within the space of 2 seconds, stunning everyone and convincing many that they just saw a crash at the tower. Now, the spectacular... Okay, so that's basically what Morgan Reynolds is talking about. And I wanted to play the audio from an appearance that Morgan Reynolds did on Fox News Channel. This was mid-afternoon on Sunday, September 10th. I think you'll find it very interesting. It's the first time that the 9/11 TV fakery issue has been brought to television itself, and a pretty blatant accusation of the media's complicity in perpetrating 9/11 that I don't think we've heard anywhere else on the mainstream media itself. So let's take a listen to that.
The 9/11 conspiracy theories just won't go away. In fact, this week's Time magazine spends a good deal of ink talking about the latest theories. Professor Morgan Reynolds says he has proven the government's explanation of the terror attacks is a lie. He teaches economics at Texas A&M University and is a member of the group called Scholars for the Truth. Professor Reynolds says 9/11 was an inside job, and he joins us here from New York. Well, Professor, I got to tell you, I covered 9/11, at least here in Washington, D.C. I think I have a pretty good understanding of what happened on that day. What do you know that I don't know and that the rest of America apparently doesn't know?
The government has never even tried to prove it's a OBL story. It's a fiction. The 9/11 Commission never tried to prove it. You cannot prove a lie. There's your problem. There's so many things wrong with the 9/11 fiction, the myth, the official government conspiracy theory.
Well, you say, for example, that there were no planes that hit the World Trade Center. Is that your contention?
No, what I say is that there were no big Boeing crashes at every all four events. There's no significant wreckage, for example.
Well, did you see the videotape that the rest of us saw?
Sure, and I encourage everybody to do a frame-by-frame penetration of the South Tower, and what you will see is a fake, a cartoon display. Because an aluminum plane cannot go through a building like the South Tower was, as if it were thin air.
So you're saying, right through. You're suggesting that there's some kind of cartoon animation there. You're suggesting that the news media was a part of this.
Yes,
those pictures came from the news media.
Yes. Well, there was only one so-called real-time film, and we don't really understand how they did that. There are video experts in the disbeliever movement, but most of those were subsequent tapes, and they are contrived.
And
you believe
that the missing planes were shot down by missiles?
No, well, of course, we don't understand everything about the crime. The two American airliner flights, for example, though, were not even in the Bureau of Transportation Statistics database.
Where do you think they are now, if they didn't end up in the Trade Center?
Well, no, we don't have that kind of knowledge. What we can do, however, is point to WTC Building 7, which was clearly a controlled demolition. And then the Twin Towers were clearly another inside job in that they were blown to kingdom come.
What do you say to people who say, look, you know, this just is too far-fetched. This is just too bizarre for me to even buy into.
Well, the Scripps Howard poll just showed that 36% of the American public, and the real percentage is probably higher, believes that the elements of the United States government were complicit in the crimes of 9/11.
All right.
So we're gaining week by week. It's out of control.
Morgan Reynolds, thank you very much for joining us here on
You're welcome.
Live. America's security took a big hit on 9/11, but so did its economy.
Now, my friend Mike thinks it's crazy to think that 9/11 was an inside job. Well, we might hear more of that later. And a lot of people who think that 9/11 was an inside job think that it's crazy to examine the video footage, as Dr. Reynolds just suggested right there. Well, folks, you know, in complex situations, sometimes it's best to think out of the box. So, you may be right, but it just might be a lunatic you're looking for.
Wasn't hurt.
Billy Joel, 1980, You May Be Right.
All right, this is Total Information Radio, taping on September 10, 2006 for broadcast September 18. We're here in New York City with leading 9/11 TV fakery researcher Nico Haupt. We had some technical problems last time, but this should be better. Nico, you were in the Washington Post on Friday. What did you think of that?
Well, I honestly have to say I was surprised. I said the whole last few months there will never be a mainstream report about 9/11 TV fakery because the media is part of it. I assume now that they just try to spin it that way, that 9/11 TV fakery itself is so controversial and is therefore rejected by the majority of the 9/11 movement, which is true. So they describe me as a skinny, black dressed. I guess they associate me with an anarchist who was showing for 1 hour footage with vectors and all the stuff. So that looks like if you are on hashish, that's what they said, there were no real planes. So they play with a little bit irony in their articles. But in itself, pretty fair to describe what I did. I did nothing else but just showing the footage to show there are contradictions. That's all I can say. We can't prove TV fakery. We don't know what exactly hit the South Tower. From the forensic evidence, you have to come to the conclusion that there were no planes.
Yeah.
But it doesn't rule out that military devices, some opposition, could have hit the South Tower.
And you can come to this conclusion whether or not you're on hashish.
I guess yes, and I'm still just a rabid cigarette smoker. I just came from a very exciting event. Bush was here. We filmed them with John Gannon. This is a freelance camera operator for INN World Report, used to work for, and his girlfriend, his wife, Mel Bell. So we are able to get very good footage from the hotel, from the windows, seeing him at the ground zero, then following the motorcade. Then we know exactly when he was in the church, in St. Paul's Church. Then it was all of a sudden a lockdown in the hotel, but I made something up. I said, I have to leave the hotel. My grandmother has a heart attack. So we went two more blocks, and then I was with Carl, he's with the No Police State group, and we opened the famous Bush regime engineered 9/11 banner. This was a famous banner we were holding with New York 9 Truth, the group I co-founded in late 2003, and we Z-Kyled, very politically incorrect, the complete Bush motorcade.
Are you sure Bush was in the motorcade?
We're pretty sure, because that was a motorcade we identified before. We knew exactly that would be the same motorcade.
And about what time did that happen?
It must have been around between 5:28, 5:30 and 6 p.m. because that was the time when the lockdown was supposed to open. So unfortunately, we tried to get as much activists over there, not just talking about stuff we know. A lot of people were here still at Cooper Union, but we saw Alex Jones. He was pretty intense debating with some of the cops, I think. And I think Total was there. We filmed him from the hotel room. I think a lot of New York people saw 9/11 cover-up signs, 9/11 banners, inside jobs, the T-shirts, some loose change. So I think we did a good job over there. We did as best as we can. We tried to heckle, but there was no chance. Otherwise, we would have been handcuffed.
And how do you think support among the conference goers here is for 9/11 TV fakery? More than you thought?
Well, people still say hello to me. I know them since years. I work with them on the streets, in the media. They know me from articles, from Teammate Plus, from Global Free Press. Most of them, they don't think that I'm an agent. So
that's nice.
For sure, some people say, why do you...
I mean sarcastic.
Yeah, sure. Some people say, why do you go there? But I have a lot of new supporters, especially also since the Washington Post article. So they say it is the case. On the other hand, I also have to support the activists who say we don't need any more evidence anymore. We have enough, and that's why I always said I want to have real activists on the street. I want to have civil disobedience. I want to have a real political opposition, not people just talking in cyber chat rooms. So basically, I'm not even one of these hardcore obsessed researchers who said you have to debate it on cyberspace. So
yeah,
I still believe also this organization, this movement, had to be much more decentralized.
That's fair, and some people can concentrate on TV fakery and others can concentrate on other things. It's all good.
That's what I'm saying, and if we're really honest, there was always a diversion from day one. There were always people who said, don't go to, don't look into the Pentagon stuff, the cell phone stuff. We were blocked for 4 years by people close to LimeTruth.org, as reported now by New York Villager, who blocked all evidence on controlled demolition. So if you really claim I'm sabotaging the movement, I cannot tolerate this. My heart is with the truth. I'm a journalist since I'm 5. All I'm getting is the final details out, which for sure we don't need all the details. But I'm just so concentrating on this because it wasn't mainstream until last weekend. So I always try to find something new to convince the people. Because our biggest enemy, much more than the government itself, which is already hijacked, is mainstream media, which is military. And they hijacked the media decades ago.
Well, that's why we have to concentrate on all kinds of information that will bring down the regime. The total information. We look at it from all angles here on this show. Nico, let me ask you real quick. Let's break down another video or two real quick. What about the cab driver videos? Do you want to say anything about those?
Okay, now you have to help me. What are the cab driver videos?
The cab driver videos, I believe it's one that showed up on This Week with Stephanopoulos a year later in the New York Times, said some cab driver took videos of both hits of the planes.
Oh.
We can cut this out if you don't know.
I don't know about that one. All we know is there was this footage. It came out in 2003 or 2004 by this construction worker called Pavel Hala.
Oh, I thought he was a cab driver. You're saying he's a construction worker?
Probably he was a cab driver, but he was working on that morning as a construction, I think as a construction worker, and he allegedly had a new camera which had the exact timestamp in it. By the way, that would contradict the official seismic time, so he was timing it as if he has a correct impact time, 9:03 OAM.
And was this an amputee plane also?
I'm definitely sure, because that was one of the, we call it butter planes, which is not 100% correct, because the building is actually butter, so the plane enters into the building as if the building would be butter. We call it butter planes because it's easier than to say butter buildings, but these planes entered the building like if the building would be a butter. The wings do not break apart, the walls do not crumble. You can basically download the footage and see it by yourself. Frame by frame, nothing happens. There's not even an explosion at the side of the impact, but it comes clearly first out of the sidewalls of the...
Is there any other video you want to break down in 30 seconds or 90 seconds for us?
I just brought up a new 20-minute collage of all the footage I presented some weeks ago at New York LimeTruth.org. I make some overlays that shows the camera filming Twin Towers, and with the same size, a different channel, I think it was VH1.
Which would have been CBS feed, I think.
Yeah,
right?
Okay, so they have the same size of towers, but the CGI is completely smaller. And I made an overlay to show that this is a contradiction. So it's exactly the same camera position, there's no parallax view, it's coming straight in front of the towers, both same size, but in one side, in one push, the CGI is 5 times as big as in the footage of the other CGI.
Have you uploaded that to Google Video yet?
Well, both videos do exist. What people did not do it was to overlay the videos. That's what I did. I did a screenshot of the one footage, which has the smaller CGI. I made an overlay into the other footage with the same size of the tower. And the overlay shows the size of the tower doesn't change, but the size of the CGI changes.
Got it.
But you see, I see the most damning evidence that the footage definitely contradicts each other.
And soon after that interview with Nico Haupt, I went on into Cooper Union, and who did I see standing there engaged in deep conversation with Nico Haupt other than Jim Fetzer, founder of Scholars for 9/11 Truth. Knowing this would be good, I walked right up and turned on my recorder. Now, you're just going to hear about a minute of this conversation, but unfortunately the microphone was at sensitive, so there's a lot of crowd noise and This actually has a lot of that filtered out. But try to listen for a minute as your host, Nico Haupt, and Jim Fetzer discuss 9/11 TV fakery. Now, Barry Zwicker spoke on September 14th in Washington, D.C., and since he's supposed to be the big expert on the media cover-up of 9/11, that's the theme of his book, Towers of Deception, I thought I would put to him the question of 9/11 TV fakery and how that might fit into the media cover-up. Let's listen to that.
Some research going on now is... researchers are looking into the videos of what happened over Manhattan that were provided to us by the media, and certain anomalies have been noticed, disappearing wings, different flight paths on different videos, up to and including the live shot, which was filmed on Westcam camera system, which is a top military contractor. Have you evaluated this evidence, and do you have an opinion on whether or not media complicity extended to the videos that were presented to us?
Well, I have not reviewed all the video. I've watched various DVDs. There's so many DVDs now that have been produced in plain sight, Loose Change, Painful Deceptions, on and on my own. No, I have not, in spite of my interest in aviation, I have not analyzed all this video. As I said earlier in the evening, it's not that I've lost interest in the evidence, but I don't need any more. Mm-hmm. You know, a court may need more, but I don't need any more. So I've got other things to do with my life, like just traveling around and discussing the media and so forth. There's been disinformation also planted in regards to the airplanes. No doubt about that. And maybe speculation, if you will. I think that anybody who says that there were no planes, that it was holograms or blue screen technology, is really, really wrong. There were planes, all right, and I had friends who were there. But after that, as to who was flying them or whether they were under remote control, what kind of planes they were, I think we have to recognize in relation to 9/11 that there are primary questions, secondary questions, and tertiary questions. So take the Pentagon, for instance.
Anybody here
in the 9/11 truth movement? Well,
so there you have it. Barry Zwicker, media cover-up expert, says he has enough evidence of 9/11 being an inside job and of there being a media cover-up, and he doesn't want any more. He just wants to retail his message to, left-wing people who haven't woken up yet, which is fine, but, here we just like to keep digging deeper and deeper into the evidence. That's what we do on Total Information. And I hope Mike is listening to this part, because I believe that Mike has some respect for Noam Chomsky. So let's listen to what Barry Zwicker has to say about Noam Chomsky.
The shame of Noam Chomsky and the gatekeepers of the left. And I need to say this because Noam Chomsky is adulated widely and was for years by me. I first learned of Noam Chomsky's existence I think it was in the late 60s. I was in the anti-Vietnam War movement, and he was also. And I think he went to the Slammer for a bit on that account, which I thought was admirable. And then, of course, we saw his output of well-researched, exhaustively footnoted books about the depredations of the American Empire and bloody U.S. foreign policy. I ended up, when I started writing this chapter, I found out I had 16 of his books. And when I was teaching university for 7 years in Toronto, I quoted him frequently and admiringly. A friend of mine and I used to have a contest as to which of us could get more letters to the editor printed defending Noam Chomsky from people who were unfairly attacking him. And in fact, I helped to make the movie Manufacturing Consent. You'll see my credit there at the end. And so I was very admiring Noam Chomsky and give full credit, of course, for all the educational work he's done. It would take days to go into all that he's done by way of educating. And this has earned him a great influence on the left. But there was always something I couldn't understand about Noam Chomsky. And that was how come he absolutely agreed that the Warren Commission had it right about JFK's assassination and that Lee Harvey Oswald was the lone gunman. And I just couldn't understand that. And I had friends on the left who said they were mystified by that. I was mystified by that. I could not understand that. And because it seemed to me the evidence was pretty substantial, that the official story of JFK's assassination could not be true. And then along came the assassination of Robert, and once again Noam Chomsky said Sirhan Sirhan was the lone gunman. And then Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. came along and he said, yeah, it was James Earl Ray. I did a couple of television programs about Dr. King. I'm proud to be here. And then same with Malcolm X. Same story. Each time I'm puzzled, each time all my friends are puzzled, we can't figure it out. It's like, was time always there, or did time start at some point? Your brain freezes. How could Noam Chomsky be so, like, good and yet not get it about the decapitation of the left in the 60s? But I cut him slack. I found out later, really, I was in denial. What brought me out of denial was 9/11, which I, for one, unapologetically believe is this litmus test for every individual and organization and discipline anywhere. And so on 9/11, Noam Chomsky has been all too predictably not impressed by any evidence. He finds it not plausible. Plausible is one of his favorite words. And not only that, but he's gone beyond 5 years now of refusing to engage with any evidence, but increasingly he's critical of those who want to look at it or even those who simply want to reopen the investigation. And he is, as it were, Mr. Evidence. So this just doesn't compute to me. It doesn't compute. And people, when I was in denial about Noam Chomsky, I said things such as people tell me now, well, you know, maybe he doesn't know. Well, you're right. He has had access to all the books, all the DVDs, and if you read between the lines of his interviews, he actually has seen them. And then anyway, he says, I don't find the evidence plausible. So he must have looked at some of it. But he never discusses exactly which evidence is it that he has or hasn't seen that he finds always implausible. Not a thing plausible does he ever find. And then it turns out there are a whole lot of people who are the same as Noam Chomsky in that respect. And in a recent interview with David Barsamian, who is his chief acolyte and his chief amplifier, and it was broadcast on 200 stations, including KGNU Boulder, on August 24th, the hour was titled Global Warming, Peak Oil, and Conspiracy Theories. When it got to the 35-minute mark, they started on the conspiracy theories, and Noam Chomsky said, well, I don't find them very plausible, in his trademark laconic, dismissive way. And he went on to say that people who he now recognizes there's something called the 9/11 Truth Movement. I think he actually used the phrase once. And he said that the 9/11 Truth Movement, I sort of, I'll take this personally a bit, because I certainly am a member of it proudly, are religious fanatics, almost. And especially as an atheist, I take that. I take that badly. And also, I don't know any religious fanatics in the movement personally.
Okay, and now here's a few more minutes of me trying to tell Mike, who we heard from earlier. This is me trying to tell Mike that 9/11 was an inside job. And
you may or may not know about all the war games that were going on.
Nope.
Where a bunch of the fighters were sent up to the North Pole to fight pretend Russian fighters. That's why there were so few fighters on the East Coast that day. That was a drill.
Well, yeah,
and then there were other drills.
I'll tell you this, my dad actually is a contractor with the FAA. One of the reasons there wasn't a response is that most of our, you know, threat radar is pointed outwards.
That's what's been said.
That's the case.
Supposedly NORAD only points outwards and doesn't pay any attention to what goes on.
As far as threat radar goes, that's true.
Threat radar. Okay.
Yeah.
But anyway, one of the reasons was, so you're not aware of the war games, a bunch of the fighters are sent north. And the other thing was, and there's been a bunch of NORAD and FAA tapes released even recently, is there were different actual war games and drills going on at NORAD and FAA with hijackings. And so a lot of the phone calls that you'll hear during that were, there's a hijacking. What is this, a drill? What's going on?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why a lot of the people inside, the good people inside the system, the FAA, NORAD, whatever, were confused. Mm-hmm. They didn't know what was going on. And so that's a large part of how they control the airspace.
Well, see, that's the thing, that those happen fairly often.
Except on this day, there were several exercises. There's at least two at NORAD. There's one at National Reconnaissance Office, which runs the satellites.
Mm-hmm.
They had a drill of a plane crashing into their office that day, so. And they did an evacuation, so all the regular people on the satellites weren't even there.
Right, I mean, it's a hell of a.
And Cheney was in a bunk, yeah. So,
but I mean, literally, I mean, these drills happen. Like, I mean, I grew up in a military family, and drills like this happen all the time.
Yeah, there are a lot of drills. It's very true. This was just a particular confluence of drills. There was about seven or eight or nine different war games and drills going on that day.
But I mean, it's you know,
and that's where a lot of the other stuff came in. A lot of the whole red team, blue team concept, the offense, defense,
right.
And it likely was that a lot of these alleged Arab hijackers were actually working for intelligence as red team projects, and they were supposedly testing the defenses of the planes going on that day. So that would be another factor in the confusion. Like you learned that some of the SOPA hijackers trained at military bases.
That's the thing. Is the conspiracy theory, this is what I'm trying to get my head around, is it that the towers were bombed from the inside and the planes were incidental, or the planes hit the buildings and there's no bombs, or...
Well, the whole thing is, I don't assign 100% certainty to just about anything, you know.
Because the
belief in faith is
quite frankly, the plane seemed pretty fucking certain.
Yeah.
I mean, it
seems that way. There's just, let me ask you something.
What was the conspiracy theory say as far as like what happened? I mean, I've heard people say it was blown up from the inside. That's ridiculous, so...
You don't think when it fell at basically free fall speed that there was more going on there than just a gravitational collapse?
No, I think the gravitational collapse totally makes sense if you
free fall speed for all that material.
Yeah, absolutely, because it lost the internal support and just gained momentum. Just boom, 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 boom. Yeah, it's a very large building, at a very great height.
Do you remember about the World Trade Center 7 building?
Mm-hmm.
And that collapsed at 5:20 in the afternoon, and that was never hit by a plane. Do you remember that?
No, well, there's a lot of other shit flying around there, too.
But actually, there were some fires.
It was very close.
But it wasn't actually hit by any.
If you remember right, it was right across the street.
But there were there were other buildings between it and the towers that didn't collapse.
Yeah, but
like
but
that.
Think about all the other buildings that were in the vicinity that are also just wrecked. They didn't get to the point where they
well, number six had like a huge hole right through the middle of it.
I'm thinking of the German bank building.
Deutsche Bank.
Deutsche Bank, yeah.
That's where they all the body parts and stuff kept popping up.
It was just a standing building, yeah.
Yeah, but it was standing. It didn't collapse.
But the facade was just wiped off. I mean, you know, there was a lot of... It didn't just happen in the towers and they just fell down. It was not a controlled demolition. There was a lot of shit flying around, so... You know. And it didn't look... I mean, we've all seen on TV, like, when they do controlled demolitions of, you know, these shows on the Discovery Channel, there's like, pop-up bang, and then...
Well, number seven looked a lot like that. It was more of a conventional controlled demolition. It had the crimp in the middle of the main support column, and it kind of folded in on itself.
Right.
I obviously think that the towers were controlled demolition. I've told you that before, but they certainly weren't a conventionally controlled demolition
in any
way.
Well, I mean, just the timing with the plane would have been remarkable.
I'm talking about when the towers fell later in the day, yeah.
But they fell at the exact place of the planes. I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
Well, I mean, they can fix that with computers, though, right?
Yeah, but I saw it. That's the thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, I haven't been brainwashed or picked up on the street or taken a deal.
Well, no,
anything,
again, I'm talking more about the collapse of the building.
I saw the collapse.
The
I saw them collapse.
Yeah. No, I'm saying I agree with you that
it started
the collapse with at the area of the impact
and
then fell from beneath it. But I'm saying if you have charges computerized and wired into each other, you can set that floor to collapse and then the next one and then the ones above and then go down.
Assuming that your detonation wires didn't get cut by this giant airliner crashing into your building.
Now, we're going to play you out tonight with a song called Long Live Polyxania. It's from a band called Klaatu, which has its own interesting history, a mysterious band sprung from the mystique of the Beatles. But anyway, this song is about finding the ruins of an advanced civilization called Polyxania, which, of course, is from the Greek and Latin for crazy state. And this is about a country that just thought it was so great and thought it was the pinnacle of freedom. And the people thought that their nation was so great that it could do no wrong. And they thought that they were so great that they could do no wrong. And they could never be fooled. They could never be brainwashed, when in fact they were crazy the whole time. And it led to their downfall. Now many years later, we're finding their ruin. So think about that, get a glass of wine, maybe smoke a bowl of something, and meditate on what you've heard tonight. Have a good night. See everyone next week.
Thank you. As facts are few and far between, hypothesis defies all logic as to what precisely led to her demise. For what appears sheer grandiosity, no legacy remains, except her crumbling ruins on which these words were found engraved. These ancient Polyxenians, as far as archaeologists have traced, had most thoroughly convinced themselves they were a superior race, Quite a ridiculous notion, granted. However, if we assume her sister rivals rose to quell such monstrous claims, I most humbly submit her unpleasant end is satisfactorily explained. Those citizens who dare to question, those suspect harborers of doubt, were brought before a panel of the Ministry of Health. They were tested and encephalogrammed till rendered quite inane, when in accordance with the laws they reprocessed their brain.
We'll smite our foe.